been a few times in my life where I've gotten a massage, and there's a little movement that masseuses sometimes do. It's kind of interesting. Sometimes they'll pick up the person's head and kind of lift it up and put it down, or move, turn the head to side like this. And one of the things that some people have a hard time doing is letting go and letting the masseuse do all the moving. They maybe hold themselves a little bit tight, or they want to help a little bit, and then the masseuse has to say, you know, relax, relax, just relax into my hand, I'll do it all. And sometimes you do the same thing with the legs, and maybe lifting the legs up in some way, their arms up in some way. And it's sometimes really hard for some people to learn to just not participate, just let go, just trust what's going on. And so there's this kind of wonderful, interesting interface there between us making efforts and being an agent, trying to control, taking charge, engaging, doing something, versus stepping out of the way and not being in control, not being in charge, not trying to do something, not holding anything, but trusting and just letting something else happen. Something else, in this case, the masseuse, kind of do the movements and move back and forth. And it's a very interesting kind of interface between those two. Certainly, there are times in our life where it's very important for us to be in charge and control, or to make decisions and do things. But there are times when it's quite appropriate to let go of that and just not be in charge, and to learn to have that capacity. And for some people who get massages, it's very hard to learn that capacity to let go. Some people, it's very easy in that context. So in meditation practice also, there's the same kind of interplay or meeting place between a place where we're, you know, that place in our psyche where we want to be in charge and we have control and want to make things happen, and versus letting go of that place of control, that place of being in charge, and then letting something else move through us. And in fact, I would say meditation practice is a really great place to learn to let go of control, letting go of being in charge, letting go of holding and trying to make something happen, and trusting some other process to unfold, to move through us, when we are not the agent of control. And the superego maybe is not there, or the sense of self is not so strong, or the sense of the controller is not there, or the sense of desire, aversion is not kind of in charge of what's happening. And we kind of get out of the way. But getting out of the way in mindfulness practice has to happen with awareness, with clear awareness, where we kind of hold the situation in awareness, whatever's going on. So what we contribute to the situation is our awareness. But then everything else, all the sense of being in control and in charge of the situation, in particulars, we try to step out of the way. And sometimes we say we give a kind of permission, radical permission for things to be as they are. Or we just kind of get out of the way and let the experience be what it is. We don't try to judge it, we don't evaluate it, we don't criticize it, we don't hold on to it, we don't try to make it better, we don't try to make it worse, we don't try to get rid of it, we don't try to keep it for a long time. But there's a place of freedom, just like when the masseuse kind of lets you finally let go into that net, into the hands, and it feels so nice just to kind of let go of the control and the holding. So in the same thing, in meditation practice, it's a place we stop the holding, so just let go of that part of the mind that wants to be in charge. And then watch what happens. Watch what unfolds. And one of the, I think, marvelous aspects of the inner life is that the inner life has a certain wisdom to it. The inner life has a certain movement, unfolding, that it wants to do. And so when we can get out of the way enough, then some inner unfolding can begin happening. And sometimes it's quite a surprise what that unfolding can be. But if we're always kind of too much in charge of our meditation practice and trying to do something and make something happen, or even trying too hard to be mindful sometimes, it kind of interferes with that process of getting out of the way. And if you get out of the way, then what happens? What happens? And my premise is that when we get out of the way of our inner life, but we hold it with awareness, that whatever happens is trustable, can be trusted. Whatever happens, it's kind of, is the unfolding of what needs to happen. It's the unraveling or the resolving of what needs to happen. I know that in some Buddhist traditions, there's the idea of kind of grand idea, I guess, grand concept of things are self-liberating. The self-liberating quality of or aspect of our experience. And if we can bring our awareness, the whole thing in awareness, allowing it to be, not being in charge, not being controlled, and very relaxed, then when there's holding, when there's clinging, when there's some place of lack of freedom, lack of liberation, that the direction that things want to go is to be liberated, is to be free. But that can go, but to allow this to happen, sooner or later we're going to have to encounter the places where deep in our psychology, in our belief system, in our sense of self, where we feel it's not okay to let go. Whereas we have to be in charge, something has to happen, what's happening now is not okay, it has to be controlled, it has to be stopped, it has to be gotten rid of, it has to be something. And maybe for some people that happens right away, as soon as they sit down, first beginning to meditate. Some people, maybe it takes a long time until the mind gets really quiet and very still. We find that place where we're still trying, you know, have a self who's in charge to make things happen, be in charge of what's going on. And then it could be very, very, you feel very vulnerable, very tenuous, and very frightening sometimes to feel, well, you know, I'm not going to let go of that. That's not okay. I need to keep that control. I need to keep that in check. I need to do, you know, this and that. And so the masseuse says, just trust my hands. You know, it's okay. I'll do it for you. So then in meditation practice, you know, okay, it's okay. It's okay. Let go. You know, the meditation will do it. You'll be meditated, is the expression. Rather than you meditating, you'll be meditated. Something will move through you. Meditation will happen to you. You know, not something you do. And it's really marvelous to begin letting go into the masseuse's hands in that situation. And in other situations in life, maybe it's not so good to be that relaxed. You know, you're driving in your car 75 miles an hour on the freeway and there's a lot going on at once, you know. Maybe it's good to be tense. No. But there are places where it's, you know, it's appropriate, but there's places where it's really good to let go. Meditation practice is a preeminent place where it's okay, it's safe to let go of that place of the selfing, this place of holding on to the self who's in charge, who wants things to happen, who needs things to happen. So you let it go, relax, let go, but hold it in awareness. The other thing that happens as we do this is that, you know, you say in mindfulness practice we pay attention to whatever is predominant, whatever is most compelling, is that as we have much more sense of allowing of our life, and hold it in awareness, different things will bubble up, will show itself that need our attention. And I like to think that whatever bubbles up, whatever is coming, is predominant, is something that needs attention. Awareness is something, a very powerful gift, a very powerful offering we give to the world, to our experience. So it's very generous, if, you know, that idea, at least, that theory, that, you know, whatever comes up is something that needs attention. So we hold it in awareness and then get out of the way. Hold it in awareness and get out of the way of the control, needing it to be a certain way. And sometimes, you know, we hold things in awareness and they get worse. And then it's that's proof, right? That this spiritual path is a failure. This is not for me. Is that what it means? I think it means that that's how it needs to unfold. And maybe sometimes it has to get stronger. And so, you know, sometimes, for example, you might touch a place of grief. And so the grief has to kind of come out when people cry for some time. Or maybe there's some kind of tension and when you open to it, actually sometimes can tense up more around it. But to trust that that's okay, that's part of the process, that self-liberating process. It has to play itself out, it has to play its course. And then trust what goes on. So meditation practice is a place where it's safe to let go. hold the awareness. It takes some discipline. It can take a lot of resolve. It can take a lot of strength to keep the awareness there, to stay open, stay present, stay mindful. It requires strength to do it. So that's where the, you know, but also at the same time, this letting go. Letting go of the self, letting go of the selfing, letting go of the one who's in charge, letting go of the control, letting go of the one who. And there's a lot of ways in which we do that. And one way that we, the self operates, is to create a very strong separation between what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. A strong separation between who I am and what the other is. There's a lot of kind of ways in which the self, the ego, kind of operate, which involve tension and holding. So what happens when we begin just trusting the hands of the meditation practice, the hands of awareness to hold us up? What happens then? And I think that's for you to find out. You know, it's, everybody is going to be different. Everybody, in different days, in different situations, different things will come through. Sometimes meditation practice is incredibly boring. It's just, you know, the most boring thing in the world. Sometimes it's exhilarating. Just, this is the best. Sometimes it's frightening. Sometimes it's delightful. Sometimes it's filled with love. And sometimes it's filled with hate. And sometimes it's this and that way. How is it? So that interplay between allowing things to be as they are and holding it in awareness. Allowing things to be as they are and then not allowing things to be as they are. And when we, in meditation, don't want to allow things only to be as it is, or to allow things to change as they want to change, that's a very important place to study. It's a very important place to look and see what's really going on here. What are the beliefs? What are the attitudes? What is the holding? What's the clinging? What is it that's really happening there? So when the masseuse is holding your head up and you can't let go, what's happening there? Just study and look at that. And sometimes you do yourself a disfavor if you figure out how to let go too easily. Sometimes it might be actually more interesting to have your hand in the, being held by the masseuse and understand the fear that might be there. Or understand the sense of the tremendous drivenness to be the one in charge, or whatever. To really understand that really well before you let go. So sometimes coming to that place where the interface between where we get let go and where we don't want to let go, and hanging there and exploring that. Because the theory here is that everything is self-liberating, including that juncture, including that place where we're not liberated. In that also there's liberation. So even that, even the place where we don't want to let go, can that be okay also? Can you hold that in awareness, giving that permission to be as it is? But then hold it in awareness. Here you feel, oh, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to let go at all. No way, Jose. That's really clear. Great. Not expected to let go. Expected then to hold that in awareness. And see what happens. See what happens. And of course, it's a little bit of a trick because it's self-liberating, right? In the field of awareness, if you hold things in awareness, all things are self-liberating. So I know some people will generalize from meditation practice into their regular life in such a way that they say, well, it doesn't make any sense to let go of this sense of control, one in charge, or ego, or the self, because I really need it in my daily life. Maybe you do. I'm not going to say you don't need it. But to generalize, say, well, I can't let go of it when I'm in meditation because I need it in daily life, is like saying that to the masseuse, you know, I need to be tense. You know, it's not okay for me to let go into your hands because I need that tense neck when I leave here. So you're just going to trust, let go. Let go, let go. Let be. Let be, let be. Let things be in awareness. Awareness is such an amazing ingredient in the recipe of life. That it's almost as if we have two bodies, two hearts, two minds, two selves. We have the one, we have the body where there's no awareness, and we have the one that has awareness in it. We have the heart that is without awareness, and we have the one that has awareness. We have the self that's unaware, and we have a self that has awareness. It's almost like radically different beings or people or bodies. It's such a huge thing to bring awareness into the mix. And then to begin trusting what happens in that being of awareness. And that's been one of the great discoveries and gifts that I feel I've received from the practice, is that everything is trustable if I hold it in awareness, if I stay in that place of awareness. Even so, I think it's really great to be up against that place where we struggle with that idea. Be up against that place where we feel, well, yeah, that's good 90% of the time, but you know, what about that other 10%? What's that place where we say, no, I can't do that. I can trust some things. I can trust a masseuse. That's a silly example, but I can't. I can't trust other places. So finding that place where you have some doubts, finding some place where you question how trustable things are, and then to explore that and be there. I think it's just not always comfortable. Sometimes it's uncomfortable, sometimes it's tantalizing, sometimes it's irritating, sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's all kinds of ways. But to be up there on that edge where, is it okay to let go? Stay there and look. Come to the end of this 5-day non-residential retreat, and I'm very appreciative of all of you that came. And some people came for just a sitting. Some people actually just came just for an interview. They figured out how to sign up somehow, and they came for an interview. Some people came just for a sitting. Some people came for the whole time, and it's been really great to have you sitting here and spending the week. And I'm very fond of this lifestyle. I wish we could do more of it. Sitting, meeting, and talking, and having our regular life on either end. It's very interesting. And I always want to express my gratitude and appreciation for all of you. I'm also very grateful and appreciative of Smita for holding the space, holding the practice, and being such an exemplary practitioner for all of us. She's so steady, sitting there and practicing. And it was really wonderful. Thank you, Smita. And also, your talk yesterday was quite wonderful to listen to, and I really appreciate it. And we have a few minutes. If anyone has any questions they'd like to ask, we had that much opportunities here.
Some experience I had this week. I did the answer email, didn't try not to think about work, but I realize when I doze off or at night, work starts when you're mentioning now how to trust what's there and, you know, it's trustworthy, it seems like that would, that starts bringing back a lot of, you know, work experience. And it's, I guess my question, is there anything related that should be worked on from the dream state side, or is that's just kind of not reachable?
Interesting. So, dreams. Some people have the experience that on the retreats, the dream life becomes more full, more vivid. And either it is becoming more vivid, or somehow they're a little more aware during sleep to register it, to take it all in. We don't know. Some people report the opposite, that somehow when they're on the retreat, their dream life seems to become very quiet. They're not aware of any dreams. And so, you know, it's hard to know what's going on, but it's both directions people report. I think that, you know, certainly I have some belief that dream life is one of the places where we sometimes are processing our life, what's going on, making sense of it, or organizing it, or doing something with it. And there are sometimes deeply buried aspects of our psyche, which we're not usually thinking about or aware of, that begin bubbling up and bubbling up first, maybe or only maybe in that dream state. So it's interesting sometimes what can come up, and sometimes it's the lid's off, and so normally things we're holding back or repressing or denying or have a chance to come through. So the question is, you know, in terms of Vipassana practice, how do we relate to dreams? And there's many ways you can work with them. You know, you can go to a Jungian therapist, you know, and talk about them in some ways, or you could keep a dream journal, or you could reflect on the meaning of it, or talk to friends about it. There's many things you can do. But in terms of Vipassana practice, what the usual instruction is that is when you've woken up from a strong dream, you don't get involved in the content of the dream. You don't think about it a lot. But you get up, and if there's a lingering emotional state, or lingering mood, or lingering physical state that's somehow left over from that dream, then get up in your bed and sit and meditate and bring your awareness very carefully and fully into what lingers from the dream, what state in your being lingers from the dream. And as I like to say, the royal road to the unconscious is through the body. And so, where someone else said it was dreams, right? So if you can sit up in your, as soon as you wake up, and then go into the body, go into the emotional body, go and feel what's going on, then it might be interesting to follow that and track it and see what unfolds. Is that a reply that's satisfying? You've heard when you left retreats in the past apply here too. So please go back and be slow and careful and don't rush back into things and realize that there might be some mood swings, kind of, you know, some kind of energy swings. You could not rush back to work or, you know, normal activities, but be quiet for a few days. It really helps in a lot of that integration. In fact, I've put a lot of faith that if you pay careful attention to what happens at the end of a retreat in the next few days, there's kind of a regrouping, a reconstruction of self that happens, the usual ways, the old habits. And if you can watch that reconstruction happen, you might learn a lot about yourself. Some people, if you just rushed back into your normal life and picked up the old self like just where you left it off, and, you know, up and running, you would miss a great opportunity to watch some of the sense of self, some of the beliefs, some of the feelings, some of the attitudes that come into play that have to do with constructing your normal self, the sense of self. And so to be really careful and tender with yourself in the next few days is probably very good.
Probably everyone has noticed this themselves already, but I've noticed after retreats that not only being careful, but that in a way the retreat's still going, things are still unraveling, and it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Things are getting better still. Letting go, you learn, like Gil said, you learn things, but sometimes it's like you learn things like you learn them on a cushion.
Say, you know, classically in Buddhism, some of the forces of control, of self, that are most problematic are summarized as greed, hate, and delusion. So, to the degree to which any of you have been able to lessen, soften, let go of the forces of greed, hate, and delusion here for this retreat and experience the benefits and merit of that lessening, may that merit and benefit work for the benefit of all beings, so that all beings may also share in the lessening of greed, hate, and delusion, so that all beings may somehow find that place where the heart can be open, trusting, and at peace with itself. May it be that our practice benefits everyone, not just ourselves. So thank you very much for the week and for today and for now. And if there are some people who could stay behind a little bit to help tidy up, it would be very much appreciated, the bathrooms and various things. And see you all soon.